This is Todd Zwillick, and you're listening to The Takeaway. In July of 1969, 600 million Earthlings watched as Neil Armstrong became the first human to walk on the moon.
Surface is fine and battery. I can pick it up loosely with my toe. It does adhere in fine layers, like powdered charcoal.
It was the culmination of years of scientific development, but it was much more than that, too. The space race seems like a modern human competition.
The first artificial Earth satellite in the world has now been created in the USSR.
But before the Cold War and national power that drove the early orbiters and the moon landing, there were centuries of very human striving for prestige, for power, and yes, for curiosity.
That's one small step for man. One giant leap for mankind.
It's true, that moment on the moon was a giant leap, but the quest for space hasn't always been the purely noble quest we like to remember. And that's the subject of a new book by Dr. Alexander McDonald. He's senior economic advisor at NASA, and he's author of The Long Space Age, The Economic Origins of Space Exploration from Colonial America to the Cold War. He traces the space race not to 1945, but all the way back to the late 18th century.
Space exploration, because it is costly and complicated, serves as a signal, essentially, of the economic, organizational, and technological health of a nation, a group, or even an individual. The kings of England and France, Russia, the director of the East India Company, all over the world, this was a major endeavor, and different American groups decided that they were also going to contribute to this. The results were then published in the Transactions of the American Philosophical Society. And this became seen in Europe as a signal of the emerging sophistication of America, showing that they could contribute to world-class science in the 18th century.
Well, let's talk about some of the individuals, some of the rich people in the 1800s who wanted to pay for space exploration and for big telescopes. You tell the story of George Hale, and people will have heard of Hale Observatories. He's the guy who spent and raised tons, millions for telescopes.
Yeah, George Euler Hale is really one of the most fascinating characters in the history of space exploration or astronomy. He used his family's money to build his first observatory, but his endeavor to convince people of the world to support astronomy was really prolific. He would write articles prolifically in magazines at the times like Harper's, but what he would also do is write individual letters to all of these people that he was trying to raise money from. And he would engage in this gift-giving. He would be engaging these people as if they were scientific equals. And that was really one of his techniques, to engage them in the process of science so that when it came around to requiring support for that science, they'd be willing to do so.
What was Hale able to build with all this letter writing, this ability to get money out of rich people?
So his two crowning achievements really were the Mount Wilson Observatory and then the Palomar Observatory. And the Palomar Observatory was a 200-inch reflector telescope. And when you read the histories of what it took to build this, you know, you had multi-segments of glass that were being cast at Corning. And really, the story of the whole observatory really parallels a lot of the complex space exploration projects that we're familiar from today.
So that's the ground-based space exploration, Alex McDonald. And then we go forward to World War II, of course, and then to the 50s, and people know about the modern space race and how important that was to the Cold War. I mean, you talk about signaling, there was a great deal of motivation on the part of the Americans and the Soviets to get to a satellite first, get into orbit first. But can you talk about how politics and national signaling sort of interacted with technology and scientific achievement? Because during the Cold War, they kind of became one big ball of progress.
In 1957, it's important to think about what it would have been like to be somewhere in the world, like, for example, Ghana or Thailand, where you don't really know a lot about the Soviet Union or about the United States of America. But if you know one thing for certain about one of those countries, which is that one of those countries has sent something into the cosmos and the other has not, then you actually know something fundamentally important about the technological capacity of those countries, and that will influence your alliance decisions. And that was really what the space race was about. You know, that's why as an economist, I tend to kind of think of these as somewhat of the, you know, quote-unquote supply and demand sides of the equation, right? So you have the question of, why do people really work on these incredibly hard technological projects for their whole life? And that really comes down to the intrinsic motivations that a lot of them feel regarding the importance of humanity exploring the cosmos. But that doesn't necessarily provide the funding for those projects. And so what's the demand source? And often the demand source is a desire by some entity, and sometimes it's a government, sometimes it's a wealthy individual, or sometimes it's a community, who want to signal their sophistication. And if a space explorer, entrepreneur, or scientist has a particular project that will provide that type of signal, then you have the type of exchange that can allow, you know, for both of these sides of the equation to realize a project.
So today on YouTube, when I watch videos, which I often do, of Elon Musk's SpaceX rocket that can descend and land on the dot on a barge, what's he doing? Is he signaling to businesses that he can take their payloads to space, or is he signaling to the rest of us just how great an explorer and what a rich guy he is?
Well, for me, I think actually it's pretty clear that Elon Musk has a real genuine intrinsic motivation in the exploration of the cosmos. I mean, it's easy at this point to kind of look at that and say, oh, well, he's been very successful, and therefore he must be trying to signal something. But it's important to remember that he started this project 17 years ago or so. Both he and Jeff Bezos are really following very long-held intrinsic motivations. At the same time, they nonetheless have the effect of signaling the sophistication of their companies.
You know, one of the things I was able to take away from your book, Alex McDonald, is the inherent human need for exploration. We congratulate ourselves for it all the time. We go to Mars because it's there, because it's the next place. That has a value to us as humans, but it also winds up having an economic value. People will pay for the privilege to be part of it, to be the champion of it, to be on the trip, or to even work on it.
Humans have this enduring need to explore the cosmos, to be part of a journey that reveals new wonders in the solar system. And that this is a process that's been going on for, at this point, hundreds of years in this country. And that even when there isn't necessarily government support at a certain level, private individuals also have that motivation and often provide some of the funds that are required to keep progress moving on.
Somebody who hears you say that, though, might think, well, that's fine. He's helping to make excuses for an agency that's had its budget cut, that needs to assure people that space exploration will still be okay if the Elon Musks and the Jeff Bezoses of the world are paying for it. Don't worry, if Congress cuts NASA, it'll be all right.
Well, for one thing, I mean, Elon Musk is not paying for this himself. I mean, NASA is actually his largest customer. You know, if you add up all the observatories in the book, it only reaches about $8 billion of funding or so in today's terms as a share of the GDP. You know, NASA's budget is about $19 billion annually. If we want a space exploration project and a space exploration program that is worthy of the United States of America, then it must be the people of the country who pay for it.
The book is The Long Space Age, The Economic Origins of Space Exploration from Colonial America to the Cold War. Dr. Alex McDonald, Senior Economic Advisor for NASA. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.